Try and find out who done it, Brother Moat. That's my idea.
Yes, yes, of course we'll try and find out who did it, Brother Thaxted. But there's more. Much more. How about the Stickies suddenly appearing in our beloved Ville? Taking away those three good, good boys from our hearts. And now, Azrael. Oh, something is rotten, my friends. The demons are abroad in Snakefish.
Let me go and drop some gas bombs on them Stickies from my plane. I could burn them out.
We ain't sure where they come from, nephew.
Then let's all go after them. Do it for the Stickies, Commander the Ville.
Moat held his hands up for silence.
Peace. Peace be among us, my friends. What we must ask ourselves is who could have done this bloody thing? Who would have shot Azrael to pieces? Who would have blasters capable of that?
The words were addressed to the balcony and to the people ranged around the three walls of the temple. But Moat's eyes raked the pew where Ryan sat with the others. It couldn't have been more obvious where his suspicions lay. Ryan stood.
I hope you don't mind an outlander like me speaking out at your service, Reverend Moat.
Why, certainly, Ryan Carter. Speak your mind.
Thank you. I've been around plenty of frontier villes in my life. I know that trouble always gets laid at the doors of any outlanders. It's the way of the world. That's what could happen here if you aren't kind of careful about being fair. You know what I mean? Accusations sometimes bounce right on back against, well, the person who made them. We just heard about the death of your snake. Anyone got any proof we had something to do with it, Reverend? Nobody? I'm glad to hear it.
Ryan sat down again. Moat looked around at his wife, who waved her hand at him, as if to tell him to get on with the service.
Well, we're all pleased to hear from Ryan Carter that any suspicions, what he said. But none of that changes anything. Three of the last heroes and Azrael. Only one thing to be done, brothers and sisters. Only one thing. A feeding!
In the bedlam that followed, the congregation was on its feet, yelling and clapping in a crazed fervor. Right at the front, Ryan could make out the diminutive Baron, facing the congregation-turned mob, trying to shout something. Carla Peterson stood at his side, face pale and anguished. JB had pushed his way through the crowd to take Carla by the arm, pulling her with him and towing Edgar Brennan in his wake, heading toward the main doors of the temple. Ryan saw something else. The anger and hatred that was etched deep on the face of Marianne Moat. By the time Ryan had led the others to their rooms, JB had calmed down the Baron, who sat in the armchair, his legs not quite reaching the floor. Carla was perched on the bed, long legs folded under her, leaning back against the pillow. Rick had become tired, and it had been a struggle to help him along the street. Through the throng of Snakefish citizens that had poured out of the temple, their eyes alight as if they'd witnessed the coming of some great miracle. And the word that was on everyone's lips was feeding.
Want to go lie down, Rick?
Yeah, but I'll stay if you don't mind. Looks like this could be some sort of council. I wouldn't want to miss out on that. But couldn't we move to a bigger room? Then I could lie on a bed and rest.
After a brief discussion, they adjourned one door along the corridor to Doc and Lori's light and airy room. Rick, forehead beaded with perspiration, lay back, glanced around at the worried faces, and managed a half-smile.
Don't worry. I'm not ready for a dirt nap yet. It's just that my muscles ache and I get real tired. But I'm fine now, really.
The other friends ranged themselves around the room, finding somewhere to sit or lean. Jack squatted cross-legged with his back against the door, an ear listening for eavesdroppers. Carla stood with JB, close by the open front window. Edgar Brennan had the wicker chair alongside the bed.
So, they got their way. As easily as winking. One dead snake and they can swing most of the Ville behind them.
You don't understand. Outlanders often don't understand. If you argue against the Moats when it comes to a feeding, then it somehow seems that the finger points at you. And it's you out there in the brush, waiting for the forked tongue and the hollow tooth.
It's true, my friends. And I call you friends because I see that you are not the hired mercies that we feared. The appearance of the Stickies and that big pet of Norman and Marianne's being chilled It's all rushed events too fast. I hope that I could somehow persuade some of the decent folk of my vill to follow my lead and stand up against the moats.
It was impossible. I explained to John how the moats rule through fear and through their backing of the bikers. Edgar was too kind for too long.
So kind so long will ne'er rule long, 'tis said. Now you don't have a lot of choice.
Nicely put, Richard. By the three Kennedys, what is that towering inferno out back?
Thick gray smoke had begun to billow around the back window, and they could all hear the crackling of flames. Jack peered out.
Rain had been in God shit. Big flames.
And lots of smoke.
Lori pushed the boy out of the way so that she could look out the open window.
How does this feeding work, Baron? How do they pick who gets chilled?
The moats do it. She throws a trance, thrashes around and screams, wriggles like a snake. It'd be double funny if it wasn't all a way of removing opposition. Fat hag like her pretending to be a snake. The one she picks gets driven out into the brush, nowhere to go, no food or drink. Zombie and his brothers wait to make sure the Chosen never comes back. Doesn't take those rattlers long to know when there's food to be had.
Like Stickies to an explosion or a fire.
When will the feeding be?
Probably around dusk tomorrow. It's a big production. They all shout and scream, and they light gas fires. See it for miles, lighting up the sky.
Edgar Brennan buried his head in his hands.
Oh, perhaps if I was to leave Snakefish. I'm no use to anyone. I can't order anyone to do anything. Nobody listens to me anymore. They just want us to stop selling our gas so cheap. Everyone wants more Jack, more power. He'll turn this little settlement into one of those vills with a gaudy house every block and a murder every night.
You triple phoebe. All you gotta do is borrow a blaster, walk down the street and blow them away. We'll handle the angels for you. But it's got to be you, Baron.
John, Edgar.
No, I know we can't. Of course I know. I know the world, Carla. He's lost it. If Ryan and I walk down the street and chill the moats, it won't help him, because we'll move on. We always move on. And then the Baron here might have a few good days, but there'll be another moat, and another. Carla, there'll always be another moat. It has to come from inside.
He's right, lady. Ace on the line all the way. And you don't like it. You want some handsome hero with flashing teeth and a blaster that kills Sekhmen with every round. You want someone to come in and open all the doors. Well, that's not us you want, Carla. I've had it right up to here with you and the Baron. I'm getting out with my friends before any of us gets chilled. I'm sorry, but that's the way it is.
There was an uncomfortable hush in the bedroom, with nobody prepared to meet anyone else's eyes.
Someone outside.
Where?
Hurt someone, but I can't see because of all the heavy smoking.
Ruby Raynor's bonfire was roaring away, sending a great pillar of rolling gray smoke into the calm morning air.
Can't see anyone.
Some of the smoke got sucked into the crowded room. The main window of Doc and Lori's bedroom opened onto the street, but the fire was at the rear of the large house, overlooking a rough garden with a dual privy. Beyond that was a deep draw that ran parallel with Main Street, vanishing into the thick brush of the desert.
Close the window. Smoke's bad for my asthma, and I don't desire another of my nasal eructations.